You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two on this Tuesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Great conversation with Jay Billis last hour, talking about March Madness in a bubble in Indianapolis, the entire tournament, all the teams there. Also, the NBA draft coming up tomorrow night. I don't think there's a franchise player there. There's always going to be two or three players in the first round taken, usually in the middle or the latter part of the first round, and you go, gosh, why did he go so late? But, you know, is there going to be a Luka in this draft? Do we have somebody who could be that? Not quite sure who he is. We haven't seen enough of him. And that's basically all of those players, these kids who are in the draft. We didn't get to see him in March Madness. And usually that's when you have that coming out party where you go, you know, that guy from Iowa State, he's really good. And you've seen maybe four games of his. We don't even have that right now. You got a couple of players who played overseas. LaMelo Ball, James Wiseman played three games in Memphis. Anthony Edwards seems like the safe pick out of Georgia. Body type, good two-way player. I saw an interview yesterday on ESPN, The Jump. Seems like a really mature kid coming into this draft, but I don't think you're going to have, after Zion last year, not fair that this is the encore performance. Yes, Paulie.
I think the guy I know and most people know the most might be Obi Toppin of Dayton. You saw, remember College Game Day went there and they did a whole feature on Obi Toppin, and a lot of people were on the Dayton bandwagon going into the tournament. He got a little run last year for a college guy, and he's 22 years old.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's a good player. He can run and athletic. I think Golden State is interested in him, but who knows? Nobody tells the truth leading up to the draft. I still go back 1 year when I was hosting the NBA draft, and I had an agent of another player come up and say, have you guys been talking about Brandon Roy? I go, yeah, he's a great player. Yeah, bad knees. He won't have a long NBA career. So I gathered Jay Billis and Stephen A. Smith, and I said, what should we do with this? And I think both of them said, well, you know, you can't say that. He does have, I think, one bad knee, but Brandon Roy was really great for Portland. But his knees did end his NBA career, bad knees. But you get a little bit of that misinformation. And if they're telling us on the night of the draft, what are they telling some of the other coaches or scouts, general managers about what's going on? You know, pretty cutthroat there. But, you know, that was, hey, have you guys brought up the Brandon Roy situation? I'm like, no. But we did talk about, you know, they had bad knees. We're going to talk to Pat Forty. Pat Forty had a column, and he was talking about the coaches who don't get a mulligan because of COVID. You know, Jim Harbaugh, does he get a mulligan because of COVID here? Ed O feels like he's in a little bit of trouble at LSU. Will Muschamp gets paid by South Carolina, and he's going to continue to get paid. James Franklin, probably not on the hot seat at Penn State. But do you get a mulligan with COVID? So Pat will join us coming up here in a moment. Also, a little bit later on, Kirk Cousins, fresh off the win over the Chicago Bears last night. Boy, that was anemic. The Bears offense, they had 149 total yards. They had 32 yards in the second half. They had a great kickoff return. That was it. Cordarrelle Patterson, it feels like he's been around a lot longer. I think he's 29 years of age, but when he gets it, he wants to take it the distance. And when you go 104 on your FM dial, anytime you're returning something on your FM dial, that's pretty impressive. 104 yards for Cordarrelle Patterson. Yes, Paul.
You know, I'm sure most coaches tell you if it's you're deep in the end zone, take a knee. It doesn't make sense because you're not going to get past the 25. He's like, what the hell are we doing here? I practice all week, Cordarrelle Patterson. I'm going to just try to return it. Nothing else is happening with this team.
But how many returns did Devin Hester have? Because I thought Devin Hester was going to the Hall of Fame if he stayed as a kick returner, but then he wanted to be a wide receiver. Has Cordarrelle Patterson, does he have the most returns? Is it kickoff returns for touchdowns, McLevin?
I think he just tied Josh Cribbs for the most kickoff returns with 8. But, you know, Devin has a lot of punts, too.
Okay.
So I think overall it might be Devin Hester.
Yeah, Paulie.
Early in his career, his first 4 or 5 seasons, Devin Hester returned all the kicks and all the punts in Chicago. Then it started going away for about a 3-year stretch in the middle of his career. They stopped putting him back there on kick returns. And they had a lot fewer punt returns, so it took away some of his opportunities.
How many returns did he have for touchdowns?
Kick returns, Devin Hester has 5 touchdowns. Punt returns, he has 14.
Oh, wow. Is that enough to get into the Hall of Fame?
He's considered the best ever at that position, if you call him a kick returner. Yeah. And it's almost like a punter. If you're the best ever, you get in.
Well, is Johnny Hecker getting into the Hall of Fame, McLevin?
First of all, Johnny Hecker, every time he drops back, he wants to throw the ball. So.
Well, yeah, he's bored with kicking the ball inside the 10.
He is. Oh, what about Justin Tucker?
Justin Tucker's Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he seems like the most sure thing of that group.
I know that you get the purists who say, well, they're not really football players. Well, if you say a game's on the line, I got Justin Tucker, I like my chances. And Hecker is as good as anybody in field position. You know, we forget sometimes how that wins games, or sometimes it loses games for you. I have no problem with that. All right, 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DP Show. He's Pat Forty, Sports Illustrated writer, covers college basketball and college football. Where do we stand with the SEC this weekend, Pat?
Well, one game down, Texas A&M is not playing, which becomes increasingly problematic for them. If they hopefully they can reschedule, because they're a playoff contender, and this would be two games that they haven't played so far. Maybe they can get them both in. Everywhere else is kind of like hold your breath and see. You know, usually, Dan, if you have a 1 week problem, it's a 2 week problem. So we'll see if any of these other games are going to get canceled after four of them last week. But you know, so far that's the only one that's been announced.
And how many games we see in the Big Ten, and that if you miss two games, then you're not going to be able to qualify for the Big Ten championship, I believe. But, you know, the SEC built in a little bit of breathing space. But, you know, how much breathing space do you have before a game actually gets canceled, not postponed?
Yeah, we're running out of it for sure. There's going to be some teams that probably will not play the full complement of games. What they've been looking at with some of them is trying to schedule them on December 19th, which is the date of the SEC championship. But they, you know, if you're not playing in that, you could still play a game. Like for now, I think they're looking at Georgia at Missouri on December 19th in a game that, boy, the Bulldogs should just be rife with motivation for, because they'd be out of championship contention, out of playoff contention, and get to go play in the coldest town in the SEC in a game that doesn't matter at all.
Are we headed for Florida-Alabama SEC title game?
Yeah, I think it's almost inevitable at this point. Like, Florida, both teams would really have to screw it up. They would, they'd have to lose twice, most likely, because, you know, they've won the head-to-head against their closest pursuer. Alabama blew out Texas A&M. Florida blew out Georgia. So they would have to lose twice. So, yeah, we're looking at that, and basically, I think that's winner gets into the playoff, and possibly even loser gets in. If Alabama's undefeated, Florida has one loss, and Florida wins, I think there's a chance they both go.
And I don't know if the Heisman comes down to Florida-Alabama for the SEC title with Kyle Trask and Mac Jones. Could it hinge on that?
It's entirely possible. You know, we'll see where things stand with the rest of the country, where Trevor Lawrence is, where Justin Fields is, and even where Zach Wilson from BYU is. But yeah, that would be, that game figures to be a crazy shootout if it's Alabama Florida. You know, that's not going to be Pat Dye against Bear Bryant SEC. That's going to be like 49-42. So that would be a big showcase game for those two quarterbacks.
I don't know if I'm overstating this, but you know, Gene Chizik got that 1 year honeymoon at Auburn when he won a national title. Is Ed Orgeron in that 1 year honeymoon period? Is he on a warm seat at all at LSU?
Well, there's definitely some similarities there in terms of like the precipitous drop off. I think he is recruited too well for this to be a long term situation. You know, they should bounce back, but they are really bad this year. And they've got a lot of other stuff going on there. Obviously, they've got an NCAA investigation that includes football, not necessarily for anything that happened while Orgeron was the head coach. But they've got that. And then, you know, the USA Today report this week was very disturbing about the number of, you know, alleged sexual assaults and other incidents regarding women there, that some of which involve football players. So Things are definitely not trending the right direction for Ed Orgeron after the year when every single thing went right.
He's Pat Forte, Sports Illustrated writer, covering college basketball, college football. Had a column yesterday where you're not giving mulligans to some of these coaches based off what's going on with COVID. Run down the list of those coaches who don't get mulligans.
Yeah, obviously Will Muschamp sure didn't. he's out, and even if it's going to cost South Carolina $13 million for him to leave.
Wow.
Jim Harbaugh's not getting a mulligan. Now, is he going to get fired? No. But, you know, are the chances very strong that he and Michigan both just look at each other and say, eh, we tried, but it's time to move on? Yeah, I think that's likely to happen. James Franklin does get a mulligan. We'll see about Clay Helton at USC, right? I mean, they're 2-0, but they're the luckiest 2-0 in the country. So I don't know, you know, what his chances are there. I'm trying to think who else I had on the list here. But, you know, obviously the mulligan aspect comes into play because do people want to pony up that kind of money when they're losing that much money? And so some coaches have gotten – you know, a pass, I think, on having bad seasons this year.
If Indiana beats Ohio State this weekend, what level of upset is that?
Oh, I think it's pretty darn major. And that's not to say that Indiana isn't good. I mean, they are. They're 4-0 and they're legit. This is their defense is playing better than any time in the 21st century. Michael Penix is a great quarterback. Their receivers are outstanding. But still, across the board, they don't have Ohio State's talent. They don't have Ohio State's experience in these situations. There's just nothing from a, you know, 35,000-foot view. There's no reason for Indiana football to, you know, walk into Columbus and beat Ohio State. So it would be a major upset. It would be a complete upheaval of Big Ten hierarchy and orthodoxy. I don't think it'll happen, but they can stay in the game with them.
Yeah. Vegas has them 21-point underdogs. We'll talk to Indiana's head coach on the program tomorrow. NCAA looking into bubbleizing the entire March Madness in Indianapolis. Your initial thoughts?
I like it. I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good solution. You know, it's a great national tournament coast to coast, but let's be real about the circumstances here. And I think if you feel like this is the best way to get the tournament done, you do it. And Indy is the perfect place for it. I mean, it's not only NCAA headquarters, but it's a basketball city. It's a really centralized downtown. They've got tons of venues to use, whether it's high school gyms. They've got, you know, most of the biggest high school gyms in the country, or whether you expand a little bit and go down to Assembly Hall or over to Mackey Arena, you know, depending how big their radius they want for this. But, you know, the bigger issue for the NCAA is just getting there. Getting the season started is difficult. Having some of these events has been proven to be really complicated and arduous, and so we'll see how many games they can even get in getting this thing off the ground before we get to having a tournament at the end.
Well, I think that these schools are going to be helped out once Thanksgiving rolls around and all the students leave campus, and then basically you're bubbleizing your basketball team on campus. I think that'll help. The question is, when you travel, you know, are you going into a campus where nobody is on campus there, or how are you able to schedule these games? But I think keeping your team safe will be a whole lot easier in the next week or so.
No doubt about it. If you talk to coaches, either football or basketball, they're like, please just let us get to this point where, as weird as it sounds, please let us have a deserted campus with just our athletes here, you know, and get all these regular students out of college. But that's what they all want for that very reason. The socializing ends, the parties are reduced, and you're not traveling into other places where you're going into a 40,000 student campus.
Safe travels, Pat. As always, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you, Dan.
And that's Pat Forte, Sports Illustrated writer covering college basketball and football. This Thanksgiving, the Duttons are back. Yellowstone Season 3. Kevin Costner comes to Peacock exclusively. That's November 22nd. Boy, I'm going to have a good Thanksgiving. You know, I thought it was going to be an okay Thanksgiving. Now it's going to be a great Thanksgiving because Yellowstone is back. Season 3 with Kevin Costner. You know, you start to watch these shows, and you basically do like Succession on HBO, where you're trying to find the person who is the lesser evil of everybody else in there. Like, there's varying degrees of bad. They're all bad. They've all got issues. And then you go, I kind of like him a little more because he's not as bad as everybody else. And when I watch Succession, they're all bad. It's just a question of who's not as bad as the other people. And Yellowstone is the same way. And Costner's great. Scenery's spectacular on it. But you can see that November 22nd on Peacock. McLovin?
Who started that trend? Was it Sopranos, Breaking Bad? It feels like most shows, a lot of great, great shows, have a similar thing where there's no good guy.
But Breaking Bad had good people. Well, Hank was a good guy, tried to do well, you know, and basically trying to track down his brother-in-law.
I mean, Yellowstone has good people, too.
They do?
I don't know. You still like them. That's the other thing, too. Like, I love the Kevin guy. I know, like, you still like them even if they do bad things.
But when you're watching a show and you actually root for the person who's not a good guy to do something bad, it's weird. Yeah? Yeah, Seton.
That was the weird thing about that when Joaquin Phoenix played the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, by the end of it, you were sort of like sympathetic for him and you were like, wow, like the world has really let this guy down. And then you kind of have to remember that, oh, yeah, wait, he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
And then he's going off into a world to fight with Batman, who's supposed to be the good guy. It's very strange. It really blurred the lines between bad and good and who you were supposed to feel empathy for.
Yeah, Paul.
And all these characters like Ozark and Breaking Bad and Sopranos, the main character is usually a father and a husband who's taking care of his family while being an arch criminal. I was reading an interview with David Chase from The Sopranos. He said he really put it out there in the first season of Sopranos. Tony Soprano's taken his daughter all over Maine and New Hampshire to look at colleges, which is the most suburban fatherly thing to do. And in the middle of it, he whacks an old mafia associate that he runs into. It's like, it's right on. He said this was the ultimate example of what the entire show's about.
Jason Bateman, though, is brilliant in Ozark because he's so together and he doesn't seem evil at all. I mean, he's doing some bad things, but it never feels like he's doing bad things. Like, these are things he needs to do to sort of stay ahead of, you know, the other bad people involved in this. It's just, it's a weird dynamic. And I don't know the first producer, writers who kind of turned us on our heads and went, I'm actually rooting for that guy. Because when I was growing up, we didn't have this where you're rooting for the bad guy to do something and continue to be evil. Yeah, McLovin.
I mean, I think you go back to The Godfather. I'm not sure if you've seen that one, but like the organized crime movies, you really rooted for Michael Corleone and he could not have been more evil.
Yeah, that's a great point. I got to get around to watching that.
They keep pulling you back.
Yeah,
in.
I know.
You know some of the lines, though, right?
Yeah, I do. I've seen the clips and all of that.
Well, I understand your family situation.
Yes.
You've only seen Godfather 3. You haven't really gotten to 1 and 2 yet.
Yeah, no, I didn't see any of them. Not all the way through. Not all. I'm telling you, in my family, the family tree, there is no mafia, no organized crime.
Which means there's a ton of it.
Of course there is. But you're not allowed to bring it up. You don't joke about it. Like, now we'll get into these discussions. Who's a better actor, Pacino or De Niro? And I said, well, there's some other people to consider. And then they look at you like, who else could you consider beside Pacino and De Niro?
James Caan?
I don't. Brando? I'll give you Brando. Like, imagine if I said, throw out Daniel Day-Lewis. Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis. But if it's De Niro or Pacino, then they'll entertain that. Yeah, McLovin.
Just want to point out James Caan is Jewish, also known as the toughest Jew that ever lived in on some circles. And he played Italian in that movie. But yeah, I get De Niro, Pacino, that's pretty good one too, by the way.
It's good. I know, but I can't offer up any suggestions. That's the problem. Like Daniel Day-Lewis, I'll say, seems like he's a really good actor.
Well, take out the British guys. That's not fair.
I know.
I think I would go, if off the top of my head, Dustin Hoffman. It seems like whatever he's in, he's awesome. And he's never been that cheesy.
Mm.
As far as great actors of all time?
No, he's a great actor
in the,
of all
in
time.
In the conversation.
Mm.
Robert Duvall.
Bobby Duvall is a good one.
Yeah.
Those who know him call him Bobby. Yes, McLovin.
People like Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman, great actor.
Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks is sort of the modern day Jimmy Stewart. I'll give you that.
Denzel's up there.
Denzel, absolutely.
How about our close personal friend Clint Eastwood? Of course.
Clint Eastwood.
different. I'm not sure that.
Yeah, I don't know if he's a great actor. I think he's a great presence. Like, there's a presence about him. All right, let me take a break. I got Adrian Wojnarowski. He's great presence here. And we'll ask him about James Harden going to the Nets. Does Kyrie Irving want James Harden to go to the Nets? That's what I want to find out here. So Woj will join us coming up. And what did he make of the Chris Paul deal to go to Phoenix? Are they actually a contender? And why is it nobody's talking about Golden State? It feels like everybody's coming back, and they are kind of getting left out here of contenders here. And are the Lakers going to do anything else? Dennis Schroeder, and then they'll re-sign Anthony Davis. We'll take a break, 21 after the hour. This is the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Yesterday, the initial report was a rib contusion with Drew Brees. That escalated quickly. I'm wondering if Drew had some injuries going into that game, and then they were just sort of exacerbated. But he's going to be missing a couple of weeks where collapsed lung and broken ribs on both sides. Judging from that hit, felt like there might have been something already there, and then that added to it. And right now, Sean Payton is being silent on who his quarterback is going to be in this game against Atlanta. I'm assuming it's going to be Jameis Winston. I don't know if he's playing the mystery game here because he wants the Falcons to go, we got to prepare for Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston here. This is a big opportunity. This is the Teddy Bridgewater moment for Jameis Winston. When Drew Brees got hurt, Teddy Bridgewater came in, went 5-0, and I think that helped pave the way for him to get that deal with Carolina this past offseason. We'll talk to Adrian Wojnarowski, set to join us on loan from ESPN, senior NBA insider, part of ESPN's exclusive NBA draft coverage this Wednesday, starting at 7:30 Eastern. Woj also hosting a new three-part narrative podcast series called The Giannis Draft on the events leading up to the 2013 NBA Draft, available everywhere podcasts are streamed and downloaded. And Woj joining us now. Woj, let me start there. Did the Bucks do enough yesterday to keep Giannis long term?
I don't know, Dan, if that question has been answered yet, but they certainly made that team better, and that was a directive from ownership, from Giannis. They knew they weren't good enough. They've been a very, very good regular season team. They have not shown they've been built for the playoffs. Those are two impactful players in Drew Holiday and Bogdanovich. I would say this about Giannis. Players come to this crossroad about staying or going, signing or leaving. And generally, in my experience, there are guys who are looking for reasons to leave, and there are guys who are looking for reasons to stay. And I believed all along, Giannis has been a player who has been looking for reasons to stay. You look at his life and I think the things that are important to him, loyalty is a big part of it, and feeling people did right by him. That's a theme throughout his entire life. So there certainly was a lot of enthusiasm within the Bucks last night into this morning. They're excited, not just that it makes the team better, but that they've given Giannis reasons to want to stay. I think there's a high confidence level that they put themselves in position, but he still has to sign that contract.
So this podcast is called the Giannis Draft. It's based on the events leading up to the 2013 NBA Draft. When I go back, I'm still shocked that the Dallas Mavericks didn't end up with Giannis, because Donnie Nelson is always so good at finding these players overseas. How did Milwaukee just stumble into Giannis?
Milwaukee did not stumble into them. They had scouted him extensively. John Hammond, Jeff Weltman, who was their front office at the time, went to see him. They were at 15. The team that had essentially shut down the draft process with his agent, Alex Aratsis, was Atlanta. And they had picks going into the draft. They ended up with 16 and 17. They had brought him in for a visit. They snuck him into Atlanta right before he went to New York for the draft. But Milwaukee was a spot ahead of them. But Dallas is interesting because Donnie Nelson has such a history with international players going back to Dirk and the Lithuanian national team, and obviously driving force in bringing Doncic to Dallas. He loved Giannis. In fact, Mike Procopio, who's in the podcast, was in that room, their draft room that night. He remembers Donnie Nelson comparing Giannis. He reminded him of Dr. J. That was the name he used in the draft room that night. But at the time, Mark Cuban and the organization, they were determined to get Dwight Howard in free agency. He was the big free agent. No. They were trying to create more cap space, and by moving down in the draft, they were able to create more space. And they're another team that in the Giannis draft and the story, you know, lives with the regret of passing on, you know, a generational player in what was one of the worst drafts in recent history. Remember, Anthony Bennett went number one in that draft.
Oh, boy. I saw a tweet this morning, and it says that Harden wants the Nets, but Kyrie doesn't want James Harden. Separate fact from fiction here. First of all, is Harden actively trying to get out of Houston, and is Brooklyn the only destination if that's true?
Harden is actively trying to get out of Houston to go to Brooklyn. His focus right now is on one team. That's the Nets. That's not my reporting, certainly, on the Kyrie piece. I don't have information that he's not on board with this. I certainly know Kevin Durant is very enthusiastic about it. The two teams have been in contact, Brooklyn and Houston, but I'm told there hasn't been any real substantive talk about a trade. Remember, the Rockets, because Harden has 2 years left on his deal, they have some time on their side. They don't have to rush into anything. Different than the Anthony Davis situation in New Orleans when he was in the final year of his contract, when he was able to ultimately push the trade to the Lakers.
How does this work in Brooklyn?
Well, I think the question, there's two questions here. How hell-bent is Harden on getting there? Will he? It's easy when you're in the offseason, you're not in training camp, you're not playing games, to live with this hanging over you. It's different when your player's coming to work every day. You saw that in Minnesota with Jimmy Butler. Jimmy made it hard for everybody to exist. It couldn't go on forever like that. I don't know that that's how James will approach this. Those are different personalities, different people. But also from Brooklyn, they don't have to have James Harden. And I think Sean Marks' track record as an executive, I think he's always shown great restraint in doing deals. The idea of a, you know, the kind of deal the previous regime did for, with the Celtics, with multiple picks and multiple pick swaps going out into infinity almost, that's not his style. I think there is the potential for a restrained offer for Harden, but I don't imagine that the Nets are going to go at it, would go at it with desperation. They don't have to have them, but having them and the three of them, it's something you've got to look at. And I do think they're going to look at it and are looking at it. But there's a big difference between that and getting to a place where you have a deal.
Yeah, if I'm the Rockets, I'm in no hurry right now. I don't know. What are they doing with Russell Westbrook?
Well, they're more active in trying to seek out trades with Westbrook. They're different players, and there's different values on them around the league right now. You know, Westbrook right now, I'm not aware of any traction anywhere on a possible deal. I think it's very likely that both Westbrook and Harden are back, are still on the roster, certainly, for the start of training camp in early December.
We're talking to Adrian Wojnarowski, ESPN senior NBA insider, part of the draft coming up, also has a new three-part narrative podcast series called The Giannis Draft, the events leading up to the 2013 NBA Draft. Give me what the Lakers are doing right now.
Well, they're certainly excited they were able to land Dennis Schroeder in a deal. They're waiting to see what happens with Rajon Rondo. I think there's a market for him where he can make more money potentially in free agency than is available for him with the Lakers. And, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is going to be an interesting one. They'll want to keep him. I think he's looking for a payday with them. And I think with Anthony Davis, it is just a matter of how long of an extension or a new deal is he going to do with the Lakers. Does he get on the same contract time frame in a short deal? with LeBron, or does he go and extend longer than that? But obviously, Davis will be back with L.A.
Chris Paul deal. I know he wins. I know he's at a stage in his career of Milwaukee. I always felt was going to be a better landing spot. I thought, you know, to win a championship maybe, but Phoenix almost felt like a lifestyle situation as well. Give me the logic with Phoenix bringing in Chris Paul.
This is an organization that needs credibility. They've needed leadership. I think they really started to fill that leadership credibility void by hiring Monty Williams last year. You saw the impact Williams had on that team. That's an organization.
I think we've lost Woj.
That's probably
is an organization.
Yes, it is.
Technically right. Maybe he's getting another call.
Ooh.
Very possible.
Mm-hmm. Yes, McLovin.
Maybe it's a Brooklyn area code came in and he just had to drop it immediately.
Wouldn't it be great if he didn't even say, hold on? He just goes, boop.
Remember when we had Brian Cashman on, the Yankees GM, and I said, what if George Steinbrenner calls? He goes, oh, I hang up on you. Like, there was not even any. I don't even know if he says goodbye. I just think it's basically, oh, I'm so take that other call there. But Fritzy working on getting Woj back there. Yeah, the Chris Paul situation. You know, Phoenix probably looked at what they did in the bubble where they went 8-0 and went, you know, we can compete with all of these teams. And then you bring in Chris Paul. All right. I mean, he wins. But, you know, what is he, 34, 35? Woj, you were just on the precipice of telling something really important about Phoenix.
I tried to send the other call to voicemail, and I hung you up, Dan. I apologize.
That wasn't a Brooklyn.
I should know how to work a phone by now.
That wasn't a Brooklyn area code calling, right?
No, that was a Midwestern. I'll leave it at that. Midwestern.
Okay, yeah, we don't take those phone calls. Nobody wants to hear from Indiana. So Chris Paul, they think this is legitimate here with what they can do, you know,
This is an organization. Yeah, they need to get in the playoffs. They have been so bad for so long and rudderless. And to have someone like Chris Paul, for Devin Booker, for DeAndre Ayton, those are players who have been a part of a lot of dysfunction there previous to Monty Williams' arrival and losing and bad habits that come from that. Chris Paul brings just a competitive spirit, a leadership, and listen, he's still playing at a very high level at 35 years old. Given that he's got a couple years left on the deal, the fact that Robert Sarver is going to pay that contract, I think it's a no-brainer. I think it's unique to Phoenix. That's just, they need to get in the playoffs. They need to show that they're a real NBA organization again. It's a great NBA market. It's got great history in Phoenix, a great fan base, and they deserve better than what they've had for a very long time under Sarver. I think this, for them, was a step they absolutely had to make. I thought it was a great deal for them.
I must be in the minority here, but I am sounding the bugle of what about Golden State as a title contender? And it just feels like when we talk about the West, Golden State is not in the picture. What am I missing here, Woj?
Well, I think just the fact that they were out of sight and out of mind for a year, and Durant left, but you come back and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and certainly Draymond and Andrew Wiggins, who you kind of forget was traded there just prior to the season shutting down. And they're going to have a chance at the top of the draft here to get one of the elite players in this draft. And that's going to be somebody either they're going to keep and try to develop, or maybe if they don't use that player in a trade on draft night, later on that big player starts banging the drum to get out of somewhere. And that pick the Warriors make ends up in a larger deal down the road. But, this Warrior team is still going to be very formidable in the West. Like, that, they're not going away.
Do you have an idea of who that name who would want to get out of a place to end up at Golden State is, Woj?
No, but listen, I think the whole league is going to wait and see what happens with Bradley Beal. He has made it very clear. He is right now he is in Washington. That he is committed to staying there. He signed a short deal last year, but they've got to continue to improve in Washington. They've got to show him that there's a pathway to being a contender in the East again. But Beal is the one everyone's watching. I give Tommy Shepard and Ted Leonsis a lot of credit in Washington. A year ago, when Shepard took over, you would have thought Beal was on the way out, and he has shown him a lot of promise with trying to piece together that organization again. And so Beal has been very loyal. He wants it to work in Washington. So right now he's not available. He has told them, I want to be here now, but that's still going to be addressed over the long term. Every team in the league would love for Bradley Beal to be out on the trade market, but that's not the case now.
What's the wildest rumor you've heard in the last week or so?
Oh, none come to mind. None that are. I think what is going to be really interesting, Dan, though, is the financial impact of this pandemic and the loss of revenue around the league. How many teams out there, how many owners are really going to be willing to spend and really push it financially here in the short term? You know, we talked about last season being the asterisk season.
Yeah.
I wonder about this year with the pandemic and the potential of the virus costing teams games, just like happens in baseball, or players being out. We took for granted in the bubble everyone was going to stay healthy. How many teams actually play 72 regular season games this year? How many key players are missing in those? And you're playing without fans and all those things. This is the year, more than that bubble championship, where things could get a little out of whack. And as teams are, again, putting together their payrolls and teams, there are a lot of teams suffering financially in this who you just may see be less than competitive, less than aggressive in free agency and around the draft. Owners like Steve Ballmer, the Lakers make a lot of money with that local TV deal. That doesn't go away with no fans in the arena. How does it impact all these teams as they put rosters together and try to win this title?
Woj, good luck with the podcast and, of course, the NBA draft tomorrow night. We appreciate your time as always.
Thanks for having me as always, Dan. Good to be with you.
It's Adrian Wojnarowski, ESPN Senior NBA Insider, part of the draft coverage. Wednesday night, it starts at 7:30 Eastern on the Mothership, and the podcast called The Giannis Draft, the events leading up to the 2013 NBA Draft, available everywhere podcasts are streamed and downloaded. Take a break. Phone calls coming up next. Kirk Cousins at the top of the hour after the win against the Bears. Back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. McLovin, update the poll results.
Okay, I didn't even tell you what the poll was.
I know what it is.
What's that?
I know what it is.
No, I went rogue and went with another one.
I thought you were doing the team that feels the most hopeless.
No, because we didn't put that up yet. I did start out with, if James Harden goes to the Nets, would they be the NBA favorite?
Okay.
75% say no. But now I will switch to, which NFL team feels most hopeless? The question is, who do you put on there?
Okay. The Bears. You put the Jets on there? Oh, yep. You're putting the Bears on there.
Oh, it was sort of a Bears-inspired question.
Oh, okay.
I assumed.
Jaguars?
Yep.
Texans?
Yep.
Washington football team?
Probably.
Bengals?
Ooh, no.
Broncos?
Broncos.
Feels like they had their franchise quarterback to start the season. Feels like they're looking for a franchise quarterback halfway through. Todd, do you think that Drew Locke is your franchise quarterback?
I still need to see more. Can you say that? I had them at 9-6-1 and losing a wild card playoff game. So I was definitely on the Drew Locke bandwagon, but now I don't know what to do.
Yeah, Paulie.
I put the Houston Texans on there, and that's a team that was, you know, a 12-win team a year or two ago, but they feel like it's completely the wrong direction and that the cupboard's a little bare.
Oh,
besides the quarterback position.
But then, even then, Deshaun Watson has not played well.
His numbers are good this year, but they're not winning. Like, he has nice numbers.
Phil in Indiana. Hey, Phil, what's on your mind today?
Dan, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I wanted to run an idea by you on the NCAA tournament since it's bubbleized.
Okay.
What do you think about the idea of the NCAA, I think really has an opportunity this year to do something different, just take the top 68 teams, whoever they deem them to be, and then just go one play 68, two play 67, all the way down the line. Forget about the West region, South region. You don't have to worry about that because it's all in one place. But I really wanted to get your thoughts on that. I think this is a unique opportunity for them to really do something that would draw viewership, because those early first-round games, while your team might be in it, even though it's really doesn't have a chance. I just don't see a lot of the general public watching some of those games, but I do see this format drawing more viewers. We'd love to get your thoughts on that.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Always great to hear from you. I think they're going to have to create regions within Indianapolis. I just don't think you do, you know, 1 versus 68, 2 versus 67. I'm not opposed to the idea. I just think that you're going to have to regionalize it in Indianapolis, that certain regions are going to be playing at the RCA Dome. Certain regions might be playing where the Pacers play. Trying to figure that out. Do they have Butler, Hinkle Fieldhouse? Do you have games there? Do you have games in West Lafayette at Purdue? Do you have games in Bloomington in Indiana? I don't know how they'll do it, but I don't know if it's just centrally located to Indianapolis, downtown Indianapolis. Yeah, Seton.
Doesn't it, when you start spreading it out like that, they'll start to feel a lot less bubbled? Where you have you have people playing games all over the, the metro region or whatever you would call
but
it.
But you just travel via bus, and then you would be coming back to wherever you're going to be. Everybody's going to be in this area. I think you'd still be in downtown Indianapolis, but I think there would be bus trips that would be a couple hours out if you're going to Indiana, maybe. I don't know how many of these. If they're going to have the RCA Dome and you have three courts side by side by side and games going on at the same time, can you do that? How many games do you have during a day or night? How many other venues are you going to need, I think, is going to be really interesting. Yeah, see.
And then you get a foul called on court three and court two stops playing because they heard the whistle.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, no, you guys keep playing.
Yeah. Yes, Todd.
Can you scatter it around town at least so it could still kind of have that feel? If it's not the Midwest region, you could have let's go out to the Evansville region or the Terre Haute region. And it's just little parts, little cities and towns within Indianapolis.
Final round of the Masters, lowest rated since 1957. Declining 51% from Tiger's win last year. Joins the World Series, NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Final, U.S. Open, Triple Crown in setting all-time lows for ratings. More phone calls coming up. And in about 10 minutes, we'll talk to Kirk D. Cousins, the Vikings quarterback, fresh off the win over the Bears, 19-13. I think I said it was going to be 25-19 was going to be the final. It's going to be like one of those, that's not a typical score.